there's an ebb and flow, you know, both to the silence and the engagement. The engagement, as I hope you taste it, can taste really sweet, you know, that connection. But the silence is also delicious. You know, that coming back into the ground of awareness. And as I was sitting, I was just also realizing that sometimes I want to put the word skillful in front of the word silence, because we can sometimes elevate it almost idealistically, that that is actually the goal. And for a lot of communities, silence hasn't always been a positive thing. I was reading a description of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's work and how she has changed the Supreme Court just by who she is. And one of her greatest influences was a case that she lost. And the case that she lost was because the Equal Rights Amendment, you know, got sort of never got fully passed as an amendment to the Constitution. This whole thing of equal rights and equal pay never got resolved, and there was a woman who the case that was brought to the Supreme Court was, I can't remember the particulars, but I think it was around. It was a big corporation. I think it was Goodyear, but she had been working for about 30 years and rose through the ranks. And she didn't know it until after she retired that she was always paid a certain percentage below any male worker. And she absolutely didn't know. No one told her. And when it came, and you know, by the time she retired, it was a dilemma as to whether to raise it as an issue or not, and they finally did raise it, and it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that on a technicality, they dismissed the case because the statute of limitations says that you have to file that kind of discrimination within 90 days of the infraction. Which means that it's not just 90 days out of, it's 90 days after every single paycheck. Because every single paycheck is there. In fact, because that didn't happen, they threw the case out of court. And Justice Ginsburg wrote the dissension. But it was her dissension that caused Congress to change the law. And so, you know, there's a way in which there's the skillful use of silence and the acknowledgement of how do we reach communities that have actually been harmed by that kind of silence, that of not revealing what is true. So I wanted to talk about this, you know, this theme that was just a riff, by the way, that wasn't part of the talk. This path of the beautiful and the beloved community, that is the title of, you know, this theme. And some of you may have heard this parable, and the parables are stories, right? So that's another. One of the reasons I introduced that form is the Buddha told stories, the Jataka tales, you know, the story about his Mara last night that I shared, you know, the stories about Ananda. These are stories, but it's the universal, it's what touches you about this story, what transforms all of us about this story. And so some of you have heard about this Zen story about a warrior general who was, you know, ravaging the country, the landscape, and destroying all the villages and conquering the land. And he came upon the temple of the Zen master, who was just sitting in perfect silence in the center of the temple. Everybody else had, like, fled. And he was sitting right there in the midst of this scourge. And the warrior general burst into the room and said, "Do you realize that I'm the kind of person that can run a sword right through you without batting an eye and without missing a beat?" The Zen master says, "And do you realize that I'm the kind of person that can sit perfectly still without batting an eye and have you run that sword through me?" And in that moment, the Zen general realized that the power that he was overcome by, what was actually stronger than his aggression and violence. And so he ordained with this Zen master. So our practice affects not just our own experience. So, of course, that's an archetypal story, right? That's pointing towards a relative extreme in order to make a point. But, you know, it happens in downtown Oakland at EPMC all the time. So, I don't know. Maybe it happens on the sidewalks outside of Common Ground. But our center is smaller than this, and it's we used to be in one room, no multiple rooms. So there was no room to do walking meditation. And we would have day longs about 60, 70 people, not unlike this. So we would go outside into the city, into the sidewalk, and do walking meditation. And on Broadway in downtown Oakland, it's downtown. And there's traffic, there's people going to work, it's a line. And so then you see these people. And I was across the street one day because I had gone to feed my parking meter, and I turned around and I looked at the center, and you know, it's like you see these people walk really, like they have to get somewhere, so they're walking really fast, and they come to the block that we're on, and they slow down. And then after that block, they speed up again. But in that block, there's, you know, they may not know what's going on, but some part of them is paying attention. There's something that we're already beginning to affect the world around us. And the more consciously we do that, what kind of potential do we have as a community? So, you know, we may often, in the silence, in the inner work, which happens, and it's beautiful, we may think that there's a way in which it is our own practice, or about creating peace in our own minds, or opening our own hearts. But part of the awareness is being aware that something else is happening. Because you are a part of a collective, whether you feel it, or whether you think it, or whether you believe it, you are part of a larger whole, and you're beginning to affect that. So I use these words, the beautiful and beloved community, for many reasons. The word beautiful is, in the Dharma, beautiful does not refer to an aesthetic quality. Upendita, who's one of the living Burmese meditation masters, teachers of our Western teachers, there's a book that he says, The Beautiful Mind. The beautiful mind is the mind that's awake, that's free. And the beloved community, of course, is referring to the beloved community that Dr. Martin Luther King was referring to. Because the beloved community, he said, is the aftermath of nonviolence. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption, reconciliation, and the beloved community. What is that? That is the practice of our precepts. Our precepts are about non-harming and non-violence. these are different paths to the same mountaintop. And we, you know, part of the rub that we may feel is because the larger culture, especially in the West, is really about putting a high value on doing it ourselves. You know, we kind of feel that if we can't follow the breath ourselves, or if we're not paying attention, we're not doing something right. We can't do it, or there's something wrong, and probably we begin to feel that we're wrong, or we're broken in some way. Those of you who have been on retreat and have, you know, even today, forget about residential retreat, even today, how many of us can do this retreat on our own at home with our cell phones and our refrigerators and our, you know, computers and all the distractions of our lives? We come together, and just the aspect of being together, we're supported to stay concentrated, to stay focused. And of course, in every community, there are people you know pretty well. There are people you don't know. There may be people. One of the things on the intentions that you created was name tags. I thought that was a great idea. So a lot of you are wearing them. But even if you don't know each other's names, you know, there may be people that you like here, that you're indifferent to, that you don't know. There may be people here you don't even like. The experience of community is no different than the experience of your life. We're talking about the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. Can we stay in practice regardless of the pleasant, unpleasant, or indifference experiences that we have? Because there is a greater reason for being together. Each of us are here for a greater opportunity to be aware, to be open in our hearts, and clearer in our minds. We have different ways of manifesting that, but what more beautiful intention can we even need to be together? So that is in itself the reason to stay in relationships, this interconnection. I talked about it last night, that relationship, the relational aspect is a transformational tool. We don't save it just for our families. We don't save it just for our spouses or our partners or our children. We use it skillfully to create more freedom for ourselves and the people around us. And of course, it takes a lot of effort, takes a lot of concentration, takes a lot of coming back to, it takes a lot of time. Spirit Rock has been in existence, this is the 25th year this year. Yeah, 25th. I have been after them for 3 years to do a residential retreat specifically on community building, which is a topic that has never been done before. It takes that long to create the conditions. I spoke about safety last night, about safe enough space to belong and feel welcome through the door. So at East Bay, where I spent about half my time, we now have 5 different sitting groups. We have an open sitting group for everybody. We have LGBTIQ Q group, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, intersex, transgender, queer, and questioning. So we call it the alphabet song. Right? We have the people of color group on Thursday nights. We have something called Everybody, Every Mind, for people with different physical abilities and different mental experiences. And we have started two Spanish-speaking groups. Even though they are from different communities, the intentions are the same. The intentions towards freedom. They are doors into practice such that whole groups and communities can explore who they are beyond even the identity itself. The outcome, the desired outcome, is not the separation of these groups. It's the opening the door so that they can feel what this practice is as a way of feeling welcomed and invited, so that eventually the practice can take them into the scenario of being able to practice anywhere, with anyone, under any circumstance. And that is a level of freedom. But we don't just demand that. It's an incremental process, just like when we start with the breath, go to the body, mind, heart, and begin to open. We can't just jump into something that is so culturally conditioned to be unfamiliar. And the other aspect of, you know, creating these different doorways is that safety is not an individual matter. It is actually part of the container and responsibility of the larger whole. Maybe we call it an institution, maybe we call it a community. So that the issues of physical difference, physical limitations, or physical disability is not just accommodating the individual needs of those people who are directly affected. It's really an issue for all of us, because all of us at some point in life will have some limitation. It's a practice to be aware of. The issues of sexism and violence to women are not just problems for women. It's an issue for our larger community. Homophobia is not just about queer people. The resolution of oppression and anti-racism is not just the problem of people of color. It is held by the larger consciousness. These are issues that require our attention and mindfulness. And mindfulness inherently is kind. When you meet your moments in your retreat just as they are, when you just touch what arises, you're not pushing it away because, you know, it's uncomfortable. You're not wanting more of it because it's pleasant. So that push-pull is actually changing the moment. When you simply meet it, that is kindness. When you pay attention to someone who comes to you in distress, you know, when someone, you know, has a seemingly unsurmountable issue in their life, and they come to you, what is it that you do? You don't try to fix them. You be with them. One of the most healing aspects is to just be that witness, to be that mirror that I can see you. Can we do that with our experience? That is the witnessing. Paying attention is the aspect of love. And you know this because whenever we don't pay attention to a child, they don't feel love. Can we pay attention to these issues in our community that actually bring up a lot of complexity? Again, you know, Dr. King says, it requires a shift in consciousness. Sort of Dharma language. It's the consciousness. It takes a shift in mindfulness from the internal to the external, from all of us. Ajahn Chah, who from the Thai forest tradition, again, one of the teachers of many of our teachers in the West, he said, there's a little irony always in this little aphorisms. Well, it's easy for me to go and be alone and be the fierce ascetic and off in the forest. What is difficult is to be with other people and to learn how to spend time with them. So we actually even want more than safety. We actually want to be validated, to be mirrored that, yes, we completely belong here. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be easy going through the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. It's being able to traverse that territory, holding as wide a landscape as possible. In 1995, conservationists were about to close on a 10,000-acre ranch in eastern Oregon and convey it to the Bureau of Land Management. Just 6 weeks before the closing, the project manager for the Trust of Public Land got a call from Jamie Pinkham, a member of the Nez Perce Nation. Jamie relates that this piece of property contained the cave in which the ancestral leader Chief Joseph was born. At the end of the last great war between the U.S. Cavalry and the Indian nation, Chief Joseph had made his famous statement, "Hear me, my chiefs, I am tired. My heart is sick and sad, and from where the sun now stands, I will fight no more." The Nez Perce had very little money, but a whole lot of history and connection to that landscape. And the conversation changed both men. However, the personal transformation was insufficient to heal what had occurred to an Indian nation over generations of oppression. So they started 2 years of complex negotiations which triggered impacts across many communities in the area. One can quickly imagine the value of this effort to the Nez Perce people, but what did it ask of the white ranchers who had come to dominate this land since the beginning of the times of the Indian Wars? For a people who were forcefully removed from their land 5 generations ago, becoming a good neighbor required incredible acts of forgiveness and compassion. The return of the Nez Perce to their precious lands proved transformational to everyone around them. From that forgiveness, the largely white community of Enterprise, Oregon, felt the same lessons and started thinking and acting differently. The community became deeply divided over the appropriateness of the high school mascot called the Savages. Armed guards were required at the Board of Education hearings. And in the end, it was the vote of the students that prevailed, and the community began to sandblast off the Indian symbol from the school's walls. In 1997, the Trust for Public Land was able to convey to the Nez Perce Nation some 10,300 acres in the heart of their ancestral homeland. It was 120 years after Chief Joseph and his people were driven from their lands in 1877. 3 years later, the Nez Perce had entered into a remarkable partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the Cattlemen's Association to reintroduce the wolf. And 3 years later, after that, came the most amazing change of all, their ability to deal morally and practically with one of the most difficult issues of the West, the control of water. The Nez Perce joined the white ranchers and irrigators to voluntarily reduce the amount of water flowing to ranches so that salmon could be restored to the local rivers, an initiative that shares the control of the river and makes partners with all of life. This practice of community is really the desire to be whole again, to be whole with all of life. It's not just about our family. It's about the universal family. And if we can keep that in mind, the process of developing community becomes so much easier. And it's, as I was saying, complicated. There's a complexity of needs as difference comes into the room, as different backgrounds, life experiences, cultures. So on the board of directors, bringing it back just to a real life example, of the board of directors of at East Bay Meditation Center, we pride ourselves in trying to serve diverse communities, so the board itself is trying to be diverse. And so it's changed a little bit since I was on the board, but at one time there was a heterosexual white man, there was an Asian straight woman, there was a gay Asian man, that was me, there was a white Jewish lesbian, there was an African-American lesbian, there was a white, gender-neutral, queer-identified person, an African-American heterosexual woman, two people with multiple chemical sensitivity, one differently abled person. And we hardly got along. Sometimes we couldn't stand each other. It was a practice just to stay in the room. Because differences were so deep. And yet, you know, by staying in the room, there was something really beautiful that is being still created. And it takes that, you don't just create it once. I'll go into that later, but you know, one of the things that we learn is when the differences come into the room, we realize that the cultural conditioning of our culture is to fragment, is to break apart. Oh, the differences mean separation. What would it be like to break together? Just, you know, invert that equation. How do we break together rather than break apart? How do we truly live into the differences as opposed to push them away? This is really, I mean, we know that practice, the invitations of practice is simple. It doesn't mean that they're easy. And it's just like our personal practice. We listen to whoever may sit in the seat. We listen to different Dharma talks. We go to different retreats. But no one can do your practice for you. You actually have to bring all of those tools and those practices and create that recipe for yourself, just like what your community also needs to do. So how does this land here? Because whatever we do in Oakland, or whatever they're doing at IMS, or whatever they're doing at Spirit Rock, isn't necessarily relevant here. The practice is relevant. And that's the invitation, to create something really relevant for you. And it's really supported by even the classic description of mindfulness in the Satipatthana Sutta, whereas this passage is written, "The noble ones abide contemplating internally, they abide contemplating externally, they abide contemplating both internally and externally." This is the invitation to hold our practice, not just internally. How does the dance of life happen with all of our intentions and an experience? I was at a retreat, so this is how not to do it. I was at a retreat. It was a different tradition. It was a pointing retreat in the Tibetan tradition of around, you know, open spacious awareness, and the Vajrayana tradition has a lot of visualizations and quite powerful invitations into, you know, visualizing paths, ways to open the experience of the mind to, you know, be as wide as the sky and the universe itself. And so, you know, there were about 30 people, and we were being guided every day. But it was a non-residential, so we came in the morning and had these visualizations of expansiveness and left in the evening. And there was limited parking in around the meditation center. And so, you know, we gathered for the first couple of days, and we started getting complaints from the residents near the meditation center that this group of cars was preventing small business as well as residents from parking in their neighborhood. And so, and this is where sort of the collective groupthink cannot have the same awareness that we cultivate in our sitting practice. So what happened is that everybody changed their parking spot to another parking area. But they all followed each other, right? So they had the same impact in a different area. And they got complaints again. And, you know, the teacher was not interested in the mundaneness of this issue, because we were out here, right? And so, you know, it wasn't addressed. And the day after the retreat was over, the meditation center lost its lease because of the complaints by the residents. You know, that there was this disconnect between the intention of the practice and how we live our life. It's a, you know, it's a both and. It's a dance. And just to say that, you know, I love this passage that Thich Nhat Hanh says about this practice of Sangha, about the refuge of Sangha. "The Buddha, our teacher, predicted that the next Buddha, or the Maitreya, the Buddha of loving kindness, it is possible that the next Buddha will not take the form of an individual. The next Buddha may take the form of a community, a community practicing understanding and loving kindness, a community practicing mindful living. And that practice can be carried out as a group, as a city, and as a nation. So, thank you for doing that, for practicing that as a group, as a community today, and hopefully this will seed more opportunities. So I wanted to take a break before we move into the remaining part of the day. But before you move into your break, what I'd like you to do, you have your groups of four, you kind of remember who your cadre are. What I'd like you to do is when you come back from your break, which will be about 10 minutes, let's say 2:30, I'd like you to form a group of eight by just joining with another group of four. So again, you see the trajectory of this practice that I'm offering, that we started with the dyad, and we practice and accumulate, and cumulatively are building our practice to expand out. So when you come back, before you leave, you know, configure your group of eight and then take a break, please.
I just need to address something in the spirit of great vulnerability. Not the first time, unfortunately, that I've addressed this sangha this year. When the names of the people, the board members, were being listed, there were many people who laughed at the board member who I identified as gender neutral. We're not the butt of a joke. It is actually extraordinarily painful. My heart feels like it's going to jump out of my chest right now. So I just want to call out, because I have such deep respect and faith in this community, and I need to call out just that it's hurtful, that it's not a joke. People being trans, being genderqueer, having gender neutrality, please open yourselves to respecting that. If there's discomfort with it, check in with yourself. It's not actually humorous, and it's hurtful.
Thank you for giving voice to that. So just allowing a few moments to have that settle in and feeling that opportunity for greater mindfulness so that we can learn collectively this feedback loop. Thank you. So, just allow yourselves to reconfigure to a slightly larger group and taking a break, and we'll ring a bell in about 10 minutes.